This show is pre-recorded and furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life with your host, Alan Gervie. Alan is the managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good evening. I am Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law. This is an exciting show for me today because I think a lot of you know as I am a big sports fan. And of course, during the day, I'm in court trying cases. I'm negotiating deals with respect to law and a lot of depositions, a lot of things going on. But that doesn't mean that I don't spend a lot of time with sports, because I do. Every day of my life, I am coaching my son Hudson's baseball team, his basketball team, his football team, and hockey team. And then my daughter Harper, we're in all-star season now, and we're doing softball, and there's conflicts all over the place. And I still have time to follow sports. And you know what? These days, it's pretty exciting because we are in June, and that means the finals of the Stanley Cup hockey. It means basketball finals. A lot of baseball going on all the time now, getting into mid-season, yet some of us still think a lot about football. In the middle of June, we just had the NFL draft 6 weeks ago, and training camps, starting mini camps. A lot of thought about what's going to happen in football. So today, we're not going to escape talking sports with a lawyer, but of course, we're going to talk sports with the super agent. Forbes called him the greatest sports agent in history. He is a sports agent, a philanthropist, very important to him, and a best-selling author. He's represented over 300 professional athletes in football, baseball, basketball, boxing, and Olympic sports. He's represented the number one overall pick in the NFL draft, a record 8 times. He's represented over 60 first-round NFL picks. He successfully negotiated over $4 billion in contracts for players, which includes Troy Aikman, Steve Young, Patrick Mahomes, Warren Moon, Edgerton James, Warwick Dunn, Jeff George, Russell Maryland, and a host of others. And, of course, we can't forget about the $850,000 to charity that he has spearheaded. He received screen credit as a technical consultant on several films, including Jerry Maguire, Any Given Sunday, and For the Love of the Game. And most people would agree that he was the inspiration for the sports agent in the film Jerry Maguire in 1996. Last time Lee Steinberg was on the show, we talked about that. That was about 5 years ago, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's happened in the last 5 years, because Lee has become just right at the top of the game, no pun intended, but he's gotten back to where he said he was going to go back in the day, back 5 years ago on this show. He worked as a consultant on a show that I loved, HBO show Arliss, and he's been a New York Times bestselling author, Winning with Integrity, Getting What You Want Without Selling Your Soul. That was authored with Michael Dorso. And then, of course, his book we talked about a lot last time, The Agent, My 40-Year Career Making Deals and Changing the Game. He did a TED Talk at Chapman University, Making an Impact in the World Through Sports. He's actually been involved with the Human Rights Commission, Children Now, Children's Miracle Network, Starlight Foundation. He's donated time and resources to Special Olympics, Juvenile Diabetes Foundation, and Junior Achievement. Doing the work for others has been so important to Lee, not only as a sports agent, but as an individual. Lee Steinberg, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Thank you so much. Happy to be with you. You know, if Hudson and Harper show enough talent, I've got to get in the bidding for early representation rights.
I would really enjoy that. I think they would be honored, obviously. You know, Hudson's 9 years old, Harper's 8. They're both on the All-Star team in baseball. I want to get, you know, and I'm going to deviate for a second because you brought it up, Lee, and I appreciate you doing that. I want to get him into football. He's been doing great with baseball and basketball and hockey. Being from Canada, he's got a natural hockey instinct. But he's been playing flag football, had a great season last year. My wife won't let him play tackle. When I was 8 years old, 9 years old, I was playing six-man tackle football. I loved it. What do I do if you're going to represent him? How do I get him playing tackle football in this day and age? And you wrote a really great article people should check out about concussions and about contact, the violent contact in football, and how the equipment is helping change things. But tell me, Lee, what can I do to convince my wife to let him play tackle football?
Well, actually, you're probably going to lose that argument.
you know, Nancy.
Right. So you're going to lose that argument. But part of it is because, you know, I had a crisis of conscience back in the late 80s. I'm representing half the starting quarterbacks in the NFL. And they would get hit in the head, and we'd go to doctors and ask how many is too many hits and what are the long-term consequences. And they had no answers. So I started holding concussion conferences with neurologists and experts in equipment and playing surface. And we just held our 17th. And one of the things you learn is that the youthful brain is still in a state of development. And the effect or impact of a concussion on a young person who still has to go to school is much more dynamic and destructive than it would be for someone 10 years older who's, you know, at a different level. So
yeah.
What you probably want to do is he can just watch a lot of football. He's already playing Pop Warner, but I would hold off till high school.
Really? Wow. You know, and I know it's important, and I'm not trying to brush it aside, but why was it different when you and I were growing up? Why was there not this concern? Wasn't the human body the same back then as it is now?
So the body is the same. However, we have modern training techniques that increase size, strength, and speed. And so the actual G-force at the line of scrimmage, the physics of the hit have changed because you have much bigger, stronger, faster people who are hitting on every play. But the second thing is that the brain is the last frontier of medical research. And while we knew everything about every bodily joint, it's only in the last 10 years that there's been an exponential explosion in the amount we understand about brain function. So the answer is, when we were growing up, people were having concussions, and they were also having subconcussive events, which is every time a lineman hits the line of scrimmage, it produces a low-level subconcussive hit. But people just joked about it. They said you were getting your bell rung and the rest of it. And no one covered the athlete that was 60 years old and had a proclivity towards Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, premature senility, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and depression. Now we have the science to know and understand what the danger is. And so while I love football and think it teaches great values, we have to be very careful in terms of preserving the brain.
Very interesting. And you know a lot about this. You have your annual Brain Health Summit. Is that in conjunction with your Super Bowl party?
It's become that. But in the past, there was one we held in the marina years ago. And that had neurologists like Bennett Amalu and David Hobbs and Robert Cantu and Julian Bells. And at that one, they said, well, 3 is the magic number. And once you get higher than that, then you're risking what the consequences we just mentioned. So I called it a ticking time bomb and an undiagnosed health epidemic. And there are some promising developments in the field, but it's still inescapable that playing football can cause brain damage.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about this, you're showing a lot of care and concern for other individuals. It's something that you've been doing through your whole career. Your father taught you to try to be an agent for change. What did that mean?
Well, when we were growing up in Los Angeles, my dad had my two brothers and I, and he just emphasized, outside of spiritual values, two concepts. One is to treasure relationships, especially family, and to be a good friend to people in times of need. And the second was try to make a meaningful impact in the world and relieve pain and go and target issues that made a difference. So whether it's domestic violence or sex trafficking or bullying or racism or the environment, I realized that athletes could trigger imitative behavior, and that if we design programs where they retrace their roots to the high school community, the collegiate community, set up a scholarship fund at the high school level. Troy Aikman endowed a full scholarship at UCLA and has done more for them. And then at the pro level, set up a charitable foundation with leading business figures, political figures, and community leaders to help execute a program that would be like Ward Dunn, the ex-running back, putting the 200th single mother and her family into the first home they'll ever own by making the down payment and then outfitting it, or Patrick Mahomes focusing on at-risk kids that are either in hospitals or in difficult, broken family situations, and funding. So it's athletes making a difference, and they can, the way in which they can do it. When I represented the heavyweight champion Lennox Lewis, he cut a public service announcement that said, "Real men don't hit women." And that could do more because of the macho nature of who he is,
right,
to trigger change in the attitudes of rebellious adolescents towards the correct way to treat women than 1,000 authority figures ever could.
Yeah, that's really impressive. We have to take a break. We're talking to Lee Steinberg of Steinberg Sports and Entertainment. And you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And we are talking to Super Agent Lee Steinberg. A lot of people know Lee because of the movie Jerry Maguire, but there's so much more to Lee Steinberg than just being a sports agent. As we were talking about in the first segment, doing well for others, not only for the athlete, but for change, for the underserved, underprivileged, is something very important as part of the job of being a super agent. Now, you wrote a book, Lee, and it talked about making deals and changing the game, but also showed a lot of integrity. That's with your two books, the other one, Winning with Integrity. How do you conclude how you've been able to do what you've done, bringing record amounts of money to players like Patrick Mahomes, but still being able to smile and not being thought of as a real jerk?
First of all, I think the most important thing in the world is the listening skills. It's the ability to draw out another human being and understand their deepest anxieties and fears and their greatest hopes and dreams. So if you can put yourself into the heart and mind of another human being and see the world the way they see it, then you can navigate your way through life gracefully. So whether it's sitting and listening so I understand how to fulfill an athlete, or thinking about the needs of people that own the franchises they play for, it's all about tuning in at a deeper level and being able to draw out people so you get below the surface. It's, you know, men particularly don't share quite as easily as I think most women in your audience
right.
would agree.
Yeah.
So you have to peel back the layers of the onion and go deeper and deeper until you discover the man's walking down the street and he's got stage 4 cancer. You ask him how he's doing, and he says, oh, fine, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, people wear masks, and you need to be able to fulfill people by understanding what really is critical to them.
Yeah, I think they call it mauvais foi. I studied that back in the day in philosophy, and you're right about that. People wear masks, and it's hard to get through that onion. You've dealt with so many different personalities over the years, and a lot of people would say that some of the athletes have become more and more arrogant and entitled as time has passed. How have you been able to deal with that? Because you're talking about some really strong values, things that maybe you learned back in the day when you talked about growing up in LA. How have you been able to deal with some of these athletes who didn't have the benefit that you did of, you know, your father's wisdom and your family?
It's by trying to align myself and doing research before I would ever meet an athlete in terms of, do they have a giving heart? Do they have a sense of social conscience? I don't expect that they'll have completely developed theories or goals and all that, but part of the maturation process is what makes the field exciting is that you're dealing with young people who are going through maturation. And if you will deal with them holistically, thinking of them in terms of not simply getting to and through a draft, but having a long career, but second career and what other skills and talents they have. Now, let's make no mistake, these young athletes are part of a generation that grows up on computers and big screens,
social media,
fast cutting, social media, multitasking, and it has the effect of attenuating patience and narrowing that. So you better get it out quicker with a contemporary athlete. You know, concept he's going to sit and listen to you for 2 hours is a fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. But, you know, just listening to that, I'm thinking there must have been some times where you've met one of these athletes, you've seen them play on TV and saying, wow, it's amazing, this is a great athlete. And then you get face to face and you're thinking, I don't know if I can deal with this guy. He's not listening. You know, you're talking about listening. He's not listening. He doesn't get it. Don't you feel like you want to run, or do you feel like, well, I can work with him. There's somehow I can get through.
Again, I think it depends on the spirit and the heart of the person. If they're a self-starter, you know, I'm not taking totally people who have matured. And so you're trying to simulate the best in them. But I once had a running back who, after I talked about charity and community, said, Lee, I'm my own charity. And he ran the fastest 40 I've ever seen out of the office. So by trying to profile potential clients and see someone who your values align with, then you can avoid those situations. But that's not going to help you with the fact that young people growing up today are, you know, you and I on a Saturday afternoon probably went out the front door, played for all day,
yeah,
played sports or made up games. And today that same kid is sitting, you know, with a headset on, playing, you know, a fighting game on
exactly
the computer hooked up to 20 other kids, you know, with one of the enormous video games. More kids today are playing video games than are playing Little League Baseball.
Yeah, and that's sad. You know, that's one of the things that I've been really focused on with my kids, trying to keep the iPad away from them. And, you know, they're still young, and they're doing that. They're outside playing. It's so important, and I'm sure you've seen that too. You know, I talked about some of the negatives of dealing with some of the athletes in today's world, but you must have experienced so many positives where you see a kid and you just almost want to cry thinking, this kid has his head screwed on right. And this is exactly what I'm looking for. And he's going to do really well with this kind of personality and background. Is there anyone in particular or any examples that you can give of that kind of feeling when you've met someone and thought, wow, this is a genuine good human being?
Well, that's the way I felt when I met Patrick Mahomes, because he'd been brought up by a baseball player father.
Right.
So he understood how to not get too high or too low. Very grounded, very, very mature, very, very bright, and wanted to make a positive difference in the world. And you meet people like that. And we currently have a quarterback for the Dolphins, Tua Tagovailoa. And, you know, he's already gone back to his high school and set up a charitable foundation. He has a charitable foundation at one in Alabama and one in Miami, and it extends Hawaii. So that part of the perception of contemporary athletes is fed by the way the media covers them. And the sports page can read like the business section, but even worse, like the crime beat section. And they take every aberrational behavior, you know, whether it's drunk driving or a fight or domestic violence, and they force feed us that. Well, the reality is it's not news if someone wakes up in their own home, you know, next to their wife, drives safe and sane to the stadium, gives peak performance, graciously signs autograph, works in the community, you know, makes a positive difference in the world. That's not news. You know, dog bites man is not news. Man bites dog is news. So it gives you an artificial sense. And the reality is we know that professional athletes have much lower rates of drunk driving, drug abuse, and everything else. We test them. And but that's not the perception you might have, you know, if you're following what's happening with Deshaun Watson or
you mentioned Deshaun Watson, and after the break, I want to talk a little bit about Deshaun Watson. We had Rusty Harden on our show, who represents Deshaun Watson, at least in a couple of matters, and he was on a show a couple months ago, had a very positive outlook. Things have changed a little bit since then, given some new allegations. But before I go to the break, real quickly, you mentioned Pat Mahomes, and I have to say that he had such a different upbringing. You know, being in the Minnesota Twins locker room growing up, seeing his father as a professional athlete, and he was a good baseball player, a very good baseball player. So many of the kids that you're seeing now didn't have that kind of background. So quickly, can you tell me, you know, if you can still see what you see in Patty Mahomes in some of these kids, even though they haven't had the opportunities that he did?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have parents doing a sensational job. You have single parents doing a really good job. And athletics teaches a whole set of skills, which is postponing current gratification for future success, work ethic, teamwork, processing huge amounts of information in real time, courage and performance under adversity and pressure. And those skills are applicable to second career or to anything else. And so you see committed athletes all over the place who are dedicating their lives to just being better and do care about other people.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, when you talk about listening, you have to listen. And I'm sure you hear that aspect of someone when you are talking to them before your representation and during your representation. We've got a lot more to talk about with Lee Steinberg. He tweets at Lee Steinberg, L-E-I-G-H, and his website is steinbergsports.com. Check it out. It's a great website. A lot of information there. And we will be back talking to Lee after this. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. We'll be right back. back. We're in the third quarter. Little analogy to a football game. And there's a good reason, because we have Lee Steinberg on the line. And yeah, I want to tell you, before we start talk a little bit about Deshaun Watson, I got to tell you, I don't know if you recall when I spoke to you last 5 years ago and we were talking about your agency and how you were kind of getting yourself back on your feet. I don't think I'm talking out of school. We talked a lot about it, that, you know, you had issues with alcoholism in the past. You've been clean and sober for, about 12 years now? And
I'm in my 13th year.
13th year. And you know, a lot of adversity. People see you and you look great. I mean, it's amazing when someone sees a picture of you, you say, wow, he's 35 years old. And, you know, so you're maybe 39. So, but people don't realize what you've been through. How did you climb your way back to the top? You just had recently the biggest contract in the NFL with Patrick Mahomes. About a year ago? You've got a whole stable of new athletes, young athletes, great athletes, and yet you were a little bit lost, 10 years ago?
I was very lost, and I had a series of events where my father died a long death of cancer, and my children were diagnosed with a disease called retinitis pigmentosa, and we lost a house due to mold, and I turned to the wrong thing, which was alcohol, to sort of ease the pain, and I got to the point finally where I went back to my parents' home in West Los Angeles, closed down my office and said, you know, if nothing else, I'm going to be sober and I'm going to be a good parent. And what I think saved me was an epiphany where I realized I'm not a starving peasant in Darfur, to contemporize it. I'm not sitting in Eastern Ukraine with bombs coming down on me.
Right.
I don't have the last name Steinberg in Nazi Germany.
Right.
And I'm not sick. I don't have cancer. I don't have a whole bunch of things. What excuse do I have not to live up to my father's admonition to be good in terms of relationships and great in terms of making a difference? And so I accepted the fact that I was an alcoholic. I went off to sober living, worked. If you're out there and you're struggling, and you're confused and despondent and stressed because of problems with addictive substance, just know there's hope. And I worked a 12-step program with the Unique Fellowship and just started stacking up days of sobriety. And again, just in sober years, just turned 12. But there is help out there. Available help, and I tried to be open about the fact that, you know, I'm a recovering alcoholic in the hopes that there's someone out there who will hear and listen and maybe find a little bit of inspiration in the fact that you can come back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm listening, and I know, you know, we have a mutual friend, Amy Studi, and she's lectured on this and talked about it. It comes from the heart, and it really makes people understand and believe that so many successful people, you can identify with them. People think you're on the top of the world, and when you're not, you identify with that, and it impacts so many people's ability to get back on their horse when they hear people like you and Amy who talk about what they've been through and are open about it and are not embarrassed about it. They feel it's more important to impact others' lives than to hide. And you have been able to just reach the pinnacle again. And that's something, obviously, to be proud of. You have to say, though, you had a lot of hard work to get to where you are now with Steinberg Sports and Entertainment after, you know, I think it was when Asante took over your former firm and there was litigation going on. How did you ever see that you were going to be where you are now?
Well, it's interesting you referenced Amy Studi because she's been a great inspiration to me and is an amazing woman. Fortunately, I grew up with a sense of optimism, and it bears a barn filled with
manure.
I'm sure there's a pony in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So it's relentless optimism. I mean, the struggle to recover sometimes feels like Sisyphus pushing the
right
big boulder up
the hill
top, and every time he makes a step forward, he makes a step back. So it just takes a sense of perseverance, and that's why it's important to just visualize it in terms of today and all the rest of it. But again, if there are people out there who are struggling, just know there's help available, and you don't have to do it alone. I've had the great privilege of having some amazing people around me who are very supportive.
Yeah, it's all about perspective. Listening to you talk, I'm thinking everyone can identify with it. No one escapes misfortune. And if you put it in perspective, then anything is possible. Having said that, I've mentioned Deshaun Watson a couple times now. Where do you see this going? Because it's really becoming intriguing, the situation with Deshaun.
So the Houston authorities decided not to press criminal charges. And it looked like he was on his way back. He signed a contract that was unbelievable in terms of being all guaranteed and at a really high figure. And it looked that way. And then just recently, there were, I think, 22 or 23 women who filed suits. Recently, there's been a 24th with a whole series of allegations. So the NFL is looking at it now. I know nothing about the facts underlying it, so, you know, make a presumption of innocence for him.
Right.
But if that last allegation looks like there was a much larger pattern here, again, none of this has ever been adjudicated, but, you know, I think he gets suspended for some period of time.
What about the guaranteed contract? You mentioned it. It's a huge contract. Obviously, you've negotiated those kind of contracts. Is there anything that can negate it, can take that guarantee and turn it around in these contracts? And I know you probably haven't seen this one in particular.
Well, it all depends how it's written, because most contracts, even if they're guaranteed, can't supersede the conduct policies that the league has. And if a player, for example, receives a signing bonus for a four-year contract, and then year two he became disqualified due to something or other, then in most cases that obviates or wipes out the guarantee for at least that portion of the contract that he's missed games for. So, you know, we'll have to see. In general, remember going back to Ray Rice, this was an issue that traumatized the NFL because it hit the third rail of public concern. So it was viewed across the country by people who were not sports fans, but strongly were against domestic violence. So, again, you know, you and I can't really speculate as to how that turns out. But if they decide there's a pattern, he missed all last year, but he could end up missing another year.
Yeah. Have you, and we only have 30 seconds before break, but have you ever been in this situation with one of your clients where it's just these tough decisions? And when you talk about the impact it has on public opinion, that's a big one.
Well, the sad part of this is that athletes can be a big part of the solution on issues like domestic violence. I referred to Lennox Lewis doing the public service announcement, but they can be big proponents. And part of the key in all of this is preparation. So when I have a young athlete who's just entering sports, I say, look, if you understand that you're going to get privilege and largesse that comes because of being a pro athlete, you have heightened responsibilities too. So when you go out, you need to have a designated driver if alcohol is going to be consumed. If you go out into a place where fights can start, you need to be surrounded. And you can never put your hands on another person in anger off the field man, woman, you just simply can't do it. And if you've got a problem with any of that, if you won't take preventative measures, then you're going to end up sabotaging what otherwise could be a very productive career.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to take a break. We're talking to Lee Steinberg. You can find him at steinbergsports.com. We've got the fourth quarter coming up, and unfortunately, there will not be overtime. We've got time limits here, so it'll only be the fourth quarter. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. For the fourth quarter, talking to Lee Steinberg. Forbes calls him the greatest sports agent ever. And I'm sure he would say that if that's true, it hasn't been easy to become that. It's been a long and successful career. As you look forward, Lee, what are the issues in the NFL that you think are going to be most important over the next foreseeable time?
Well, making progress on the concussion issue is important, because if 50% of the mothers and fathers out there understand the connection between football and possible dementia, and tell their teenage boys, as you're experiencing in your own life, you can play any sport but not tackle football. It wouldn't kill football immediately, but over time it would have an impact, and it could end up a gladiator sport, and which boxing and UFC are, where only people with severe financial situations will play it, knowing what the dangers are. So that's something that needs heavy focus. One of the things I've been doing is I've been out exploring modalities that either can accelerate athletic performance at the critical time, because these games are so tight. A couple months ago, four NFL playoff games came down to the very last play, which is almost impossible.
Yeah, what a day, the weekend that was.
The second thing is return players to service quicker. But the third thing is, can we find an actual solution for a concussion? So I've explored a set of modalities which anybody over 40 can benefit from, and it's hyperbaric oxygen and stem cells and light stem and a brain process biofeedback, which is brain training. It's RTMS, which is another brain treatment. But there are amazing medical breakthroughs happening in terms of preventative, and they can both have a big impact in sports, but also for anybody out there who wants to extend their life and useful function longer, they're really exciting.
You know, that's an interesting topic. Probably a whole show we could talk about that, because there's so many different ways in the future to look at it. But looking at the present right now, let's talk briefly about the contracts. They are getting scary. You know, this year we saw with the wide receivers getting huge contracts. And I know you're not complaining about this, but how is it going to impact in terms of the financial structure of each team, caps and all of that? Because if you're going to give all this money to one player or two players, what's going to happen to the rest?
So we've really entered a two-tier system that probably is evocative of income inequality in the larger society, because to give the perspective, a team has to evaluate who is absolutely irreplaceable, non-fungible, non-modular, and who is replaceable. And for those few positions, and you mentioned wide receiver just joined him, but for the quarterback and the weak side tackle and the shutdown corner and the edge rusher and now the wide receiver, those positions are viewed as so critical. The game has become quarterback-centric, and it's really impossible to win without a franchise quarterback. So to balance those salaries, the backups are all making the minimum. So there's real credible explosion. Now, as the money, it's there. Part of it is the explosion in television contracts. So when I started back in 1975, each team got $2 million as their share of the national TV contract in the NFL. Today, last year, that figure was $200
million. Wow.
And Fox and CBS just upped their offers for the next 10 years by 83%. So the money comes from television. It comes from luxury boxes, naming rights, jumbo scoreboard. It comes from fantasy sports, merchandising, memorabilia. It's an explosion, and teams are guaranteed profitability because there's an income revenue split, and roughly 53% of it in football goes to management and 47% to the players. It can go as high as 48%. So the point is, they're not spending money they don't have. They're spending money that they do have.
Yeah.
As long as football is a loss leader and can help the Foxes and CBS of the world help their Monday through Friday programming by showing promos on Sunday, they'll continue to bid. They lose money, but they gain overall support for the network.
You know, it's interesting just hearing that. You're thinking about what you said earlier about it maybe becoming a gladiator sport and things changes down the road in the future. There's a lot of money at stake. So it's not simply about whether the players can stay healthy. There's a lot of people banking literally on football being as exciting and popular as is now. We only have a few more minutes, Lee. I want to go on to some of the things that are coming up for you. You're going to be the master of ceremonies for the Southern California Jewish Sports Hall of Fame at the end of the month. How did that come about, and are you looking forward? It sounds very interesting.
Well, to show you how bereft my ethnic group is for real athletes, I'm in three Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. Los Angeles, Northern California, and Orange County. 2 years ago, before the COVID, I emceed that banquet, and it's really exciting. When I was a young kid, the fact that Sandy Koufax pitched for the Dodgers and I was Jewish made was a real role model to me. And you've got athletes in different categories who will and you have high school athletes, and you have college athletes, and then you have the pro athletes. I think there's a pitcher for the Atlanta Braves who's
Max Fried. I
think you're right. So Max Fried will go in, and there are other people, but it's really a joyful event.
By the way, I grew up watching Max Fried. He played at the Encino Little League, and a friend of mine, his kid played with him. So I know Max and his father, John, and he also idolized Sandy Koufax. He's a lefty, just like you did, at a different stage. It's going to be great. I'm interested to hear how that all turns out. In the last couple minutes, though, I do have to say there's a word called a mensch, and I want to say that you are a mensch. You are doing a talk for the California Applicant Attorneys Association. It's called Negotiating with Integrity. It is at La Costa on June 24th at the La Costa Resort in Carlsbad. And that should be a really exciting time. There's still tickets available. So if anyone wants to come and see, that's a Friday, June 24th. It is part of a convention for workers' compensation attorneys. And Lee is a featured speaker on Negotiating with Integrity. So that's where the mensch comes in, and everyone is looking forward to that. I hope you are too, Lee.
Oh, absolutely. My first book, Winning with Integrity, was the 12 essential steps of negotiation. And we all negotiate in life, and fathers with their sons and daughters over curfew and allowance, and men and women over where they're going to go for vacation and who's going to do the household chores, and people buy cars and people buy homes. And so not being afraid of the process, but understanding how to do it so it becomes a win-win is really important. And, you know, it's a big group of lawyers that will identify with each other.
But, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because it's more important than just the lawyers. It's about life skills. If I could teach my kids anything, I would love to teach them to be able to negotiate with integrity and to be able to take care of themselves. And that's what you've done for so many years. So honored to have you with us, Lee. I'll look forward to seeing you in June at the convention on June 24th. And I want to thank you so much for sharing all these insights with us. He tweets at Lee Steinberg. Go to steinbergsports.com. And hopefully we can talk about more stuff next time you're on Gervie's Law, Lee.
Well, thank you. You have a great show, and I enjoyed being with you.
Well, I enjoyed having you. Take care, and that's going to do it for another Gervie's Law. I want to thank everyone for listening. Look forward to seeing you again next week.
This show is pre-recorded and furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.